Welcome to another Tech Lounge with me, Christian Schiller. Come in, make yourself comfortable. In the Northern Hemisphere, it is now very warm, so maybe like a nice tea? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic, all fine with me. That's it. Take a seat. So on this episode, I have Sharath from Sanas AI. This was an interesting conversation because there's a lot of AI tools built around understanding speech, understanding audio these days. But actually, Sanas have been going for a little while. They are not one of the companies that jumped on the bandwagon the past few years. They have been going for the heady length of sort of 7 years, which is, you know, a relatively long time in tech startup land. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Before we do jump into that interview, I couldn't really think of any better sponsor to pair with this than FlexClip, a broad platform. It has an awful lot of features for audio and video editing, for image generation, all sorts of assets you might need in your creative journey, of course, powered by AI. If you want to head over and check out FlexClip, then please follow this link to get a little discount and throw some sense the way of the show. That is go.christianschiller.com/FlexClip. Sharath, how are you doing tonight? Or tonight for me.
It's midday for me, but yeah, doing great. I think it's a very interesting day. People remember April 1st as April Fool's Day. But today is the day Sanas started.
Interesting. I mean, there's other companies as well, of course, that started on April 1st.
There's a very small company called Apple, which also started on April 1st.
Yeah. It's also interesting because there's been two really big tech stories which were not fake this past day as well. let's not go there. We won't go into what other AI companies may or not have done yesterday. But let's talk about Sanas. It's interesting because on first read of your website, you see speech AI. Mm-hmm. Removes communication barriers across accents, languages, and noise. This is something that particularly, my wife is actually a journalist as well, and she often struggles to get transcriptions to work, especially people speaking second languages and things like this. So actually just before we started, I was like, oh, this might interest you. but the interesting thing here is there's now a lot of transcription options thanks to a lot of sort of open source tools that have been released. But you actually started in 2020, so before quite a few of those. So maybe we should, this makes you a bit more interesting because you're not just jumping on that bandwagon. You've been around 3 years longer. So how did you begin and what were you trying to do in 2020?
I think 2020, this was first, it started as an April Fool's joke to incorporate the company on 1st April. I think Sean, Max, and Andreas, my three co-founders, were all studying, all between 18 and 20 at Stanford. They had an interesting incident in their life where one of their closest friends took a drop year from school, went back home to Nicaragua. And again, he had to do something when he was at home. So he joined a call center for a technical support program. And he unfortunately was let go in the first 30 days, not because if he knew anything about computers, this kid was a full-scale Stanford grad. So he obviously knew how to start a computer, but it was because how he sounded. And that kind of stuck with them. And then they're like, hey, we should start a company. If we have to start a company, what do we call it? Hey, Rahul had this incident, so let's call it something to do with spoken sound, which is phonetics. And they found this name called Sanas, which is like a palindrome. And they said, we like the name.
Yeah.
And they incorporated it. And then, in a way, they forgot about it. And then 6-7 months later, Sean, who was the youngest of the three, said, hey, there is a way to actually break down speech other than the ways that the world knows. We spoke about transcription initially. Most transcription companies do what the people call a speech to text. And today, if you look at all the companies who are on the AI agentic bandwagon, do text to speech, right? And everybody is releasing a model every day talking about, we are more expressive. I can sound flirty. I can sound excited. I can sound this way. I can sound that way. That's all text to speech. He said there's a very native form of breaking down speech, which is you don't break down speech to any other intermediate form factor, but to speech itself. And the only way that you could do that is you break down speech to phonetic sounds. Like Chris, the first phonetic sound of your name is K, right? And that phonetic sound, when you break it down, has no language. And it's the most natural form of how you actually pronounce your word or your name, right? And he said, there's a way to do this. I don't know how, but if you can do this, you can do it in real time, super low latency, and it has almost no compute requirements. You can technically do this on device. And then that got all the three excited again. And Sanas, which was a forgotten April Fool's joke, started coming back to life. This was early 2021. And then they went to Stanford Speech Lab because they were all studying in Stanford. And they met a professor there. And he said, hey, how do we go about building this? Right? It's a white paper. Now, how do I prove that this can actually be done? And then that professor helped them. And then he said, hey, this will also take some money. Why don't you connect you to a few people? They connected this gentleman who was teaching in Stanford as a visiting faculty called Steve Schlunker, who also, by the way, runs DN Capital. And he put in a $50K check and said, hey, why don't you guys do something about it? And then the professor introduced to a few other people. And at the same time, they said, why don't you put up a website and say what your problem statement is? Maybe you will get more people to help you because there are a lot of people building in speech. And they had this one-page landing page with just the word Sanas. Think speech, think Sanas is a tagline. And they had a contact us form. For some reason, I saw that website. I don't know how. I don't know who told me about this concept. I used to visit Stanford Speech Lab, but I had nothing to do with it. And they, Sean tells me today that when I was actually writing a post for our founding day to my team, and he said, you know, you are the only person who wrote to us on that website. And again, this is where happy accident, right? So I write to them, and then I get this call from this person called Andreas, and he said, hey, are you the Sharath who is the founder of Observe.ai? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, it'll be so exciting to meet you. Where do you stay? I stay in Palo Alto. Hey, we are all in Stanford. We want to come and meet you. And we meet. And then I fall in love with the team, the three young kids. One was 19, one was 20, and one was 21. They were just bubbling with enthusiasm of building something in speech. And they're like, hey, we can bring the world closer. There is so many miscommunications and discrimination that happens because of speech. And I think by doing this, building this algorithm, we can kind of democratize speech for the rest of the world and bring people closer. I love the mission, so I put in a check too. And then we started hanging out on weekends. And then towards the end of 2021, I was exiting Observe and I was thinking about what to do next. And then I called all three of them and said, do you guys want to just play around with it or you want to build a real company? And they're like, okay, we don't know how. I'm like, okay, that's something I know. That can be one contribution I can make. Let's build this together. And that started the journey, right? And when the journey started, my perspective into this, being the oldest man in the room, was that, hey, if you can actually break down speech in real time, I thought about this as a two-problem paradox. This can truly solve the most humane problem there is for people to be understood by one another, right? And when you think about understanding as the cohort on which you want to build on, think of as a product person, I thought about this as a two-problem paradox. One is, when people speak the same language, what could be the potential barriers where two people cannot understand each other? And when people speak a different language, what those barriers could be? And then the more I thought about it, when you speak the same language, okay, today I'm in an isolated Zoom room, soundproof, you are in a similar infrastructure, there is probably less for us to worry about apart from my dialect could be different from your dialect. My rate of speech could be different from how you comprehend and understand my rate of speech, right? But think about people who call anybody or talk to anybody on their telephone call. Like I might call my mom while I'm driving in the car. There's a lot of infrastructure noise in the car. My son will be yelling in the background. My wife will be talking to somebody else. There is background noise. There is background voice. There is foreground voice coming in from my AC in the car, which is right next to my device where I mount my phone. So all these things have to be solved for two people, be it in any scenario, to perfectly understand each other. When people speak a different language, if I speak Hindi and you speak English, then it's a whole other ballgame. I'm like, hey, this is probably a big enough problem to solve and build a company around it, right? That ambition started becoming intense with every passing month. And now it's been 4 years to that day. I think a million people use Sanas today, and they use it for all those examples I gave you became algorithms we built. But two things stayed core in the last 4 years. One is, Sean told me that if you can decrypt speech to speech in real time, latency will be low. You can potentially run on device, right? And I said, while the world is going towards building the largest of models, consuming the most amount of compute, at some point in time, a CFO will wake up and say, hey, this doesn't work. My margins are going for a toss. I can't let you run a negative gross margin business. Let's do something better. So on-device became a big product philosophy for me. That, hey, whatever we do, let's figure a way to make this work on-device, because as an entrepreneur, I don't want my ability to raise capital to dictate the longevity of my company, right? I want to control my own destiny. I want to have a 95% gross margin business. So that became a core product cohort. And the second thing I said is, hey, I come from this world where enterprises are inundated with products to deploy, and they have this team, the CIO org, who hates it when you don't conform to their enterprise standards. So I said, hey, if this has to go and reach a billion people, enterprises need to be your best friend, right? Because B2C consumers like it, they'll use it as long as it's free. The moment you have a paywall into it, they'll stop using it. Enterprises is the way to build a long-term sustainable business. So let's make it completely agnostic to an enterprise. Any speech system we build, any speech algorithm should build, should work on any operating system, any hardware. It should be deployable in any environment, so that an enterprise CIO should look at us and say, okay, you are a God-sent technology company where I don't have to worry about anything because you conform to anything I ask you to do, right? Those were like two core things, and that's been the journey. Sorry for the long answer, but I want to give you the context.
That's all right. Well, we're going to pick up some of those threads into a bit more detail. So just to firstly understand like the experience of someone using Sanas, possibly without realizing, it's kind of everything from the basics, shall we say, of like noise reduction, clarifying, plus up to translation, like real-time translation
that's
as well.
Spread. I think I would say lightest, simplest algorithm is noise cancellation algorithm that has about a 14 millisecond latency. Mm. The most complex and the highest latency algorithm is the language translation algorithm, which is about a second or slightly more than a second.
Yeah, yeah. And so when I think of some sort of B2B companies in this space, you know, they do exist and they have existed longer than the kind of current wave of AI speech as well. I think there was the one that Discord used, which is like Crisp, I think, or was, I have no idea. There's also actually one here, I mean, in Berlin, in Germany, there was one here that was primarily aimed at people who have hard of hearing. And they put it in TVs and things like this, you know. So I'm guessing you're probably in like devices, phone trees, software and hardware, like do you go into things like TVs and devices like that?
Or? Yeah, I think about this as four vectors or four channels of how you can bring your product to market. I think the channel we chose was to go to enterprises first. right? I think we've built a $60 million business there, and it's profitable. We are now going into what we call as telcos because, hey, if I want to touch a billion people, telco has the largest user base. If my speech enhancement algorithm, which upsamples the quality of audio, make you sound like you're on a Zoom call on a 70s telco network, which telco wouldn't want it? That's the next cohort we're going after. And this year, the main focus is that. And then as we got into telco, a lot of device manufacturers came and said that, hey, today, every board and every CEO is telling every device manufacturer that your device should be an AI device, right? Very soon, you'll have 15, 20 billion AI devices that we'll all be working with. And what has happened is, with agentic infrastructure coming in, everybody wants that AI device to have a voice-first interface. But the telco networks were built in the 70s. Right? They can't handle that voice interface.
And some far older than that.
Right? So, so now device manufacturers are coming to us. Hey, can you put Sana's in our device, in our chip, in our laptop, in our headset? And we're starting to run experiments on that. Some of them have been successful, and you'll hear some of it very soon. And the fourth one is, I have this desire, if this has to reach every single person on this planet, you'll have to now include the overall community to build on Sana's, right? I think till now, because we were enterprise first, all our algorithms were like a black box. We used it. We gave it to our enterprises to use it, but we never opened it up. I think in June, we'll be opening up to the market where the whole hashtag is build on Sana's, right? I think if everybody wants a voice interface, I genuinely think in the last 4+ years, we've probably built one of the most foundational voice infrastructure platform where, again, the examples you gave of even other companies, they kind of take care of one problem in understanding stack. We take the whole stack. Right? And you can build on top of it. And everything can work on device. So it's cheap for everybody. And it is built in a very foundational way. That an example I can give you is people talk about noise cancellation. The AirPods I'm wearing here is a $350 AirPod. But it can cancel noise up to 70, 75 decibels. But the algorithm we have built can cancel noise up to 123 decibels. The equivalent is go to New York Times Square on New Year's Eve. That's the decibel level there. And we can cancel that for free.
And without the kind of, without the artifacts that you sometimes get in noise reduction?
We can, primarily because, see, mostly till now, the way people eliminated noise was, in the most colloquial term, they did something called as a frequency delimiter or eliminator. They said, hey, most human speech is between 30 and 70 decibels. So everything below 30, everything above 70, just take it all off, right? But what we do is because we convert speech to phonetic sounds, we can detect. Like if you have four people yelling into a phone, Sana's can pick out your voice and cancel the other three people's voice, right?
So And when we talk about some of those accent issues, is that what you're also doing there? Is like taking those phonetics and deconstructed them slightly to emphasize the important things you assume they're trying to say and that kind of stuff.
The accent algorithm works slightly differently. So what we did is in accent, while we were building the accent algorithm technology, we went and collected data from users. We started with enterprises. Everybody has a CX team. So we went to all the regions where they have their teams. It's India, Philippines, Africa, the whole Latin American region, about 8 countries. And we collected hundreds and thousands of voice samples. Like today, we have a data moat of 20 million hours of conversation audio from over a million agents or users who speak about 6,300 different dialects, 30 different languages. And everybody has a different kind of an infrastructure from where they're taking a call. Somebody is taking a call from their cabin. Somebody is in a conference room. Somebody is on the floor. Somebody's floor has a higher ceiling. Somebody's has a floor with no cushion. Somebody has a microphone with the cushion on the microphone on. Somebody has torn that cushion. So we've analyzed over 10,000 noise profiles, right? Based on that, we built what we call as a dialect matching algorithm, right? So today, I can take any form of an input dialect and I can translate that to any form of an output dialect. I can take somebody like me who has an Indian dialect and I can transform my speech, still keeping the core identity of me, to sound with a British accent. But it'll sound like I've spent a bunch of time in London, and hence, because of my environment, I've picked up nuances of British accent that is understood by another person in Britain.
Could you even do something as kind of more nuanced, like, I don't know, Portuguese to Quebecois French or something?
I think we have that specific use case. I don't know, but I mean, understand. Yeah. I think in Spanish language, right? I think the Spanish language spoken in Spain and the Spanish language spoken in Mexico are completely different.
Yeah.
Right?
It's the same. I picked Portuguese as well for similar, and also Montreal, because I speak French and no one understood me when I was there. So it's just kind of things that stick in my mind, you know, of these places where you think they speak the same languages, but it's just like, they sound weird to each other.
But I think we've covered, like, I would say, Chris, about 80-85% of all potential permutations and combinations. There'll always be X cases. Like today, somebody came and reached out to us saying that, can you do Welsh?
Welsh.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, is there a library for that? They said, I don't think so. I'm like, okay, do you have a date?
Oh, there are. I mean, Irish and, Welsh and Gaelic, but they're very small libraries. That's the problem. The training material is
But the beauty is, I told them that, hey, if you have a bunch of sample data because of the foundational algorithms we build, we can do something for you in a week's time. Right?
So, for the hundreds of customers there. Total, I mean. anyway, so... Let's just go back just a little bit to the past again, the founding story again, because, you know, in 2020, 6 years ago now, it still feels like it wasn't that long ago, but 6 years ago, when we were talking about AI, we were talking about natural language processing, machine learning. There was actually another very early company here that used to run an NLP meetup, which was much more about looking at the analysis of language and all this kind of stuff. And we fast forward a few years and conversations around AI have become very different. We less researcher types don't necessarily talk about those specifics anymore. So how has the way that you build your own product also changed in those years as some of the technology around you has changed?
No, I think it's probably the most fascinating time to build new technology, because I think building the barriers to building has never been as easy as it is today, right? I think our own internal engineering team has automated more than 60% of their actual coding work, right? Today, everybody is an architect, right? Everybody has to monitor what Claude has written and make sure that Claude is writing the right way. So everybody is a prompt engineer today, right? As long as you have a decent product sense, you have a decent business sense, you have a decent knowledge of syntax, you can actually be an incredible coder today, right? And that's liberating for a lot of people, right? Building specifically has become easier, but AI as a space has also become insanely competitive, right? You can imagine building the best model today. In 30 minutes, somebody has a better model in some other part of the world and you look like an idiot, right? So, which is why I think what I and the company, we decided to do is, hey, there are multiple layers where you can build a company. You can build a company at the core infrastructure layer. You can build a company at the application layer, and you can build a company at the intelligence stack, right? I think AI still has more maturity kind of work and make impact on the intelligence stack, because that requires just not the AI to be good. It also requires the overall universe and all the stakeholders to trust it fully, right? The most noise you see today is on the application stack, where there's probably a new company forming every minute, right? Today, when I look back, I recently came across a new company which has probably one of the most expressive TTS. But I was telling the founder, this is probably the 60th company I know in TTS.
So many now. I have a blog post that covers some, and so I'm endlessly getting people pitching them to me. And sometimes it's like, I don't know how to tell you apart from the other three that I've looked at this week. Like, they're all kind of the same now.
So, that's why I think as a company, we took a decision that, hey, let's remain in the core foundational infrastructure stack because that's a harder problem to crack, right? So it's hard for you to build 10 OpenAIs and 10 on Anthropic, right? You might build one or two, right? When it comes to speech, Sanas is one of those, right? Very foundational, everything is built in-house, zero third-party wrapper, right? Every line of code has been built on our own. Literally, when we started building the speech-to-speech, like there were zero references on Google Scholar on true speech-to-speech algorithm on the whole phonetic-based matching we did, right? So we had to build our own inference architecture. We had to build our own reference architecture. A lot of us had to go and understand how to build this on C++ because that's the only way you can build a lot of these things. And all of us had moved away from C++, right? So when you build something so foundational, you feel you have a moat around you, right? And then obviously, as a business owner, you do the right things of patenting a lot of things that you build, also so that you're protecting the company and the innovation you've done. I would never build another application today or get in that crowded middle where you get killed every morning because somebody else out there, some part of the world, will build something which is so good than what you've built. It's very hard.
You mentioned some more technical details there. One thing that really jumped out at me that you said earlier was around the running on, I think you said every device, but let's unpack that a little bit because there must be some minimum requirements, I'm assuming.
I think when you think about a device, right? Today, we have Sanas running on laptops, desktops. For the first time, we are putting Sanas on a Qualcomm chip, which can run on a headphone. Sanas technically can run on device. We already have an app that runs on device. We want to run more. So if you think about doing something on device, if you think about the limitation, one is, okay, how big is your app, right? If your app is 4 MB, 5 MB, 10 MB, there is a possibility of running it on a device. But if your app is 10 GB, there's no chance, right? The second thing is, one is just putting your app and how much space it consumes, then how much of clock speed you need, right? If you think about even 12 months ago, like a mobile would have between 10 to 20 clock speeds, right? But today, some of the latest phones have 60 to 80 tops, right? Very soon, they're talking about phones coming out with 100 tops, right? But the beauty is, if you have a phone with 100 tops, you can run a billion parameter model on it, right? So the hardware behind it is changing, right? Which is allowing a lot of us to build applications on device, right? So from a first principle standpoint on the product side, it was about, hey, I always told the team, you get demerit points if you come and tell me I've built a billion-dollar model, right? Come and tell me you've built a single digit million model, right? And how can it work? Think about the worst infrastructure you can get, right? Think about a 10 MB space you have. Think about your processor only has 1.4.
A low-end Android phone.
A low-end Android phone.
The low-end Android phone is the classic
example. 10-year-old laptop, which is 1.4 gigahertz processor, which none of us use today. But make it work on that because, like, if you want to build it for the world, think about 7 billion people and what kind of infrastructure they have, right? Because when Samsung is building their S2 phones, which is $2,000, they're also building $20 phones or $50 phones, which works in some country in Africa and they have users in India and many other places where even $50, $100 is a pretty expensive purchase, right? So my goal was, hey, let's make speech democratized. If you really want to make speech democratized, make it available everywhere. That's where we said, I want this to work on iOS. I want it to work on Android. I want to work on Windows. I need to work on Linux. I need to work on any operating system you can think of and any kind of a device, right? The biggest challenge for me was in the last 30 days, our team is geeking out on how to put on a headset because you only have a smaller chip you can put, like headsets. you can't sell a headset for $400. Everybody is not Apple. You have to still sell a headset for $50 to $100, but still make it work at that price point. Yeah. That's what we're working on. I think we're very close of doing something there. That for me is very exciting. And I think by taking on the hardest problems to solve, you'll build a more durable moat as a company, right? I think I like hard problems. I don't know why, but I do.
No, and especially when you come to things like hardware, that is still a little bit harder for the kind of vibe coders to take over quite yet, because it involves a whole bunch of other things that are much, I can't think of better words to say than harder, but it's not as easy as just making an app, as you say.
The only other thing I was telling was, it was an interesting incident that came in. Apart from building on device, the beauty of building on device is, it was funny when we had when we first put Sanas on this large hospitality chain called Wyndham, right? While we were in the meeting, one of the people in the meeting from the team, like, literally stood up and said, "Okay, I turned off the internet and Sanas is still working. How?" I'm like, hey, what is on device is a matching algorithm, right? You have an accent algorithm on device right now. All it is doing is, it's matching phonetic sounds in real time, and it's taking in, you're speaking an Irish accent, and it is outputting a standard American speech in real time. So it does not need the internet. And for me, because I was building it, it was like, why are you asking me this question? But for that individual, okay, you have something that works in real time, on device, and without the internet. Like, that was like a light bulb moment for him. And
it's even started to, so as I say, I live in Berlin, and we're lucky here to have a lot of like films shown in original voice. You know, often for me, that'll be American films or English films or Irish films. But often, you know, in the German cinemas, they dub them in accents of people who sound absolutely nothing like the original actors. You could actually even do something like dubbing. I think that's a completely different industry, but it'd be kind of interesting to actually have, like, I don't know, Brad Pitt sounding like Brad Pitt as opposed to some random German actor, you know, but speaking in the local language. That's kind of a side thing. But I know there's been some tools around this, and it's a little weird when you kind of get someone speaking in a way that is not them, but it sounds like them.
I think that was one of the foundational principles for us, where, hey, any speech algorithm we do, we want to make sure that it should still sound like that person, especially in an enterprise. Think about it this way. You've been working...
But if they have a different accent, it sort of doesn't. It's weird, isn't it?
If me and you work in the same company and we are talking every day, suddenly I start sounding different, you'll be like, okay, is this like an AI avatar of you, dude?
Is it a deep fake?
It'll freak out.
This is the problem, yeah.
So that's the beauty. If you use the Sanas app today, it's available on even the language translation app, right? You can sound... Okay. You can speak to it in Japanese, Mandarin, Hindi, but it'll still sound like you, because what we do is, we preserve your timbre, which is a very intrinsic... If you do a voice biometric test, it is essentially testing your timbre. Because see... Just because you have cold, you don't fail a biometric test, right? It's primarily because your timbre is native to you. It is like your individual voice signature, if I have to call it, right? We always protect your voice signature, but we then tweak everything around it from an infrastructure standpoint.
You just reminded me, I was about to come to like last two questions, but you just reminded me of, it's a relatively old book now, probably at least 20 years, I guess, which is relatively old in technology, about how interface design inspired science fiction and vice versa. And one of the things they were talking about in that book when it came to like mind control of computers was actually putting something on the voice box, because when you think words, your voice box kind of goes through the motions as it, and is a very unique pattern. So you just reminded me of that thing from that book that, yeah, your what happens here is almost as unique as your fingerprints and things like this.
And
it's not very well
known. This is very important for a lot of enterprises, right? Because, see, we work with all the six largest healthcare companies in North America today, right? And for them, their whole thing was, hey, there might be certain functions in our enterprise which we might outsource, but they're still my employees, right? I don't want them to feel awkward when they're talking to somebody here in the US or in Europe or anywhere else in the world. It should still sound like them, right? So, and for me, that was probably a very important thing as well, because in this world of AI and explosion of agentic systems, fraud is the number one fear people have, which is why they're forcing more and more regulations. That's because you're making me not natural, right? So that preserving that identity became very core as we started building more and more algorithms, because if you give that away, I can easily build a cloning tool today. It'll take me a day to build it, right? But why do you want to impersonate somebody else? Like, that's so wrong, right? That became a core part of how we've built it. And all our products, you should, again, whenever you get a chance, when you use a language translation app, please give me feedback. It'll still sound like you speaking in Japanese.
No, I will. I mean, I have much more day-to-day needs in German, so it's so just to wrap up, you mentioned a couple of there, and I can see a lot of logos on the website for customers. But you know, for anybody listening from a more kind of end user perspective, what might be an instance where they've been experiencing SANAS without realizing?
I think today, with most enterprises across their sales teams, collections teams, customer support teams, they use SANAS today. Like, if you're calling any healthcare provider in the US and you're talking to their employee, they will be using SANAS. Either the noise cancellation software, the speech enhancement software, the language translation software, or the accent harmonization software, right? Very likely, like if you call your digital bank, very likely they're using SANAS. You call your package supply chain provider, very likely they're using SANAS. So it's being used by 21 of the Fortune 100 companies today. But I think the bigger use cases for SANAS will come is when we go on the telco. That's when we start impacting billion lives. I think when we launch our developer ecosystem, when we have every smart developer all over the world building voice applications on SANAS, I think the whole world will get to experience SANAS in some shape or form. Like, I started my career working for this company called Akamai. They would say, hey, the world runs SANAS.
They've been on the show.
And I would, for me, my aspiration is one day the world builds on SANAS, right? So anything to do, if it's speech, it has to be SANAS. That's my goal.
So a question for the future, kind of for on that, as some companies are changing the way they do support and sales, either maybe switching it to, you know, a lot more AI-based, be that chats or maybe even voice, are you concerned that that will change your business?
I don't think so. See, today, if you look at it, for human-to-human communications, we have all the use cases to why SANAS can be so relevant, right? But what I've discovered in the last 12 months with all the inbounds we get is for any human-to-machine communication, as long as there is a human in the loop, that human needs to be understood, even to a machine, right? Mm. We have one of the largest TTS company in the world who've come to us and said that, hey, you know what? We've built all these great voice agents, but they don't understand accents. They're not trained on accents. They don't understand dialects. We have one of the largest speech-to-text companies in the world who've come and told us that, hey, you know what? We don't know when to start and when to stop because of the background noise. There's this problem in machine learning world called turn-taking, right? Because if you're in a slightly noisier room and there are multiple people speaking, an agent, a voice agent, does not know, okay, when have you started speaking and when have you stopped speaking, right? And these are all like core speech infrastructure related challenges, which I think we can solve for. So I would encourage more and more agentic applications being, as long as it's there, ethical and highly integral, to come into full use. But I think what will happen with that is the number of voice interactions will explode. So there'll be enough work for human-to-human communications, and there'll be enough use cases in the human-to-machine communication spectrum. And SANAS is at the core foundation of everything. So I like it when voice becomes the native first interface for speaking to people.
No, for sure. It's kind of interesting that we're going back to that book I mentioned, you know, the future of speaking to your computer is kind of now here.
No, I think we all have seen science fiction turn into reality. Like somebody was telling me, we're talking about flying cars here. They're like, hey, China has drones that carries passengers from one place to another.
Oh, yeah.
So science fiction becomes reality eVTOLs very quickly.
Middle East. And anyway, that's, yeah, definitely. All right. Interesting. Yeah, it's nice to always speak to AI companies that didn't just come in the past 3 years. So, so awesome. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much. Wonderful talking to you. And thank you for the opportunity.
And that was my conversation with Sharath from SANAS.ai. If you enjoyed the show, head on over to christianschiller.com/podcasts. I'm going to be bringing back some new ideas around subscriptions and, I don't know, memberships, whatever we want to call it. It's something I started a little while ago, but put on pause for a while. So I'll be back on the end of these outros of shows in the near future with some information around that. But in the meantime, that is the best place to find more. You can also, of course, follow go.christianschiller.com/flexclip to check out that AI-powered audio and video generator. That's me done. Time to go. Time to leave the lounge. Don't worry. I'll clean up the glasses. See you next time.